Recently, I got a new tool in my tool belt for my lifetime project of turning everything digital. It's called an ADF scanner, Automatic Document Feed. And I thought I'd talk about why it was so important I get one and what this whole idea of scanning really is. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. There's a lot of different ways to turn analog material digital. There's even a cul-de-sac of debate about taking things that were digital, recorded onto analog material, and then turned digital again, as to whether that's digitization at all. But the point is, at the end of whatever process you do, you end up with a string of ones and zeros that represents something that used to be something else. Once it's in this digital realm, it becomes infinite in its power to travel and be used in other locations, and most importantly, allow algorithms and programs to figure out everything about it in ways that humans wouldn't have the time or inclination to do. Once something that existed only on paper becomes digital, it becomes searchable, reusable, and in many ways comes alive again. Right now, I tend to handle two different types of digital information. Things that are uploaded by others and things that I ingest and put up myself. I'm happy to say that regardless of what people think about me, I am greatly dwarfed by the work of others. There are folks out there tirelessly turning magazines into PDF files and TIFF files. There are folks who are reading discs by the thousand, who are imaging CDs and turning VHS tapes into MPEG files. It's an ongoing process being done by hundreds, probably thousands of people every day. I'm just one of them. And I work on this knowing that if for whatever reason I didn't have the time because I had to focus on other things, the work would go on. I think it's very unhealthy if you look at what you're doing as being something that will die without you and you utterly have to stay with it regardless of if it's lost all of its sense of joy and purpose. I don't think that leads to a very healthy place. But I love going through a stack of papers or a stack of floppies or a stack of CDs and turning them into these files. I have something called an Acrinova NIMBY, which is a CD-ROM reader that can take a stack of up to 100 or even 150 CD-ROMs at once if you're feeling a little daring. I have an Applesauce FDC reader, which can take an Apple II disc and later a Commodore 64 disc, I have found out, and turn it into a disc file that emulators can use. I also have a Epson Perfection flatbed scanner. It's the latest in a family of scanners I've had over the years. They all work about the same. You have a large plate of glass with a cover. You take some sort of flat piece of paper, ranging in size from 11 by 17 on down. You put it into the scanner, press the button, and end up with some sort of file. It helps to understand that flatbed scanners are essentially a single line element. Try to imagine a fluorescent light bulb that's mounted on a little carriage that moves up and down inside the flatbed scanner. So it's not like a camera that takes everything at once. It's actually a scan line that moves through the entire sheet of paper, line by line, millimeter by millimeter, to produce what we think of as the digital file. Obviously, I have a number of digital cameras that allow me to take pictures of things that won't fit into the scanner, either because they're 3D or because the full power of the packaging just doesn't come across when you only scan one side of it. And, of course, I have the ability to take audio files, either using my microphones or direct connections. And I have a range of things like a mini DV player and my laptop with its audio setup to record a number of other media. But let's get back to the flatbed scanner. It's a workhorse. I put it through a lot of things. You can always tell when a flatbed scanner has seen some use because if you make it scan nothing and hold the cover up, you can see the scratches on the glass. It just happens over time. You're putting in CDs, cassettes, book covers. You're taking things in, putting it out, and over time, the glass just starts scratching up. If you're lucky, it'll go on for a few years before you could potentially see those scratches in the digitized files. It's a sign, to me, of a well-used utility. It means that thousands of things have gone into that scanner and found a new life. Where a flatbed scanner falls down is when you have to scan, by hand, a lot of things at once. Imagine, for instance, having a manual that's inside of a binder. You take a binder, you unclick it, you take out the stack of 200 to 300 pages inside, and now you have to, by hand, put each sheet in, scan it, flip the sheet, scan it, and then do it 300 times. Several things can happen there. First of all, you grow incredibly bored. There's not enough time to do anything else. You have to wait for the scanner to finish its 5 to 10 second run, flip it over, do the next bit, switch out the page. There's also incredible amounts of opportunity for getting it wrong, for skipping a page, for doing one twice, for not doing the back page before doing another page ahead of it, going back, hoping you'll remember to flip the two images. And of course, any situation where you put in the page, but you put it a little bit askew and you didn't notice that till later, it's just very, very tedious, and the chances of finishing more than a few of those projects is extremely small. What you need is something that can process the pages, and that's where a feed scanner comes in. With an automatic feed scanner, you stack up a bunch of pages, put them in, and then one by one, it moves through the pile, does all the work of scanning both sides, and then ends up with a pile on another side of the scanner. You just keep switching in piles, going in maybe 30, 40, 80 pages at once, and if everything goes right, and that is a big if, you end up with a whole set of digital files that required very little of your intervention. So I've been working towards knocking down the piles of material in my storage unit, and I'm getting to the point of having stacks upon stacks of pages. And a whole other range of materials that I'm not quite comfortable sending to the Internet Archive's warehouse until I see it in digital form. So a short time ago, I went on Twitter and explained to people my case. Like every other type of electronics, there are a whole range of different models you can buy to do a given task. In the case of digital scanning with an ADF attachment, you can go all the way down to a $200 machine that kind of works, but is very slow and perhaps is a little bit flaky, all the way up to a machine that will bankrupt you personally if you try to buy it and represents something that has to have a service contract to get going. In all of these cases, there's usually a middle ground. The term usually is prosumer, which just means that it's good enough not to be considered terrible, but also not great enough to be too expensive. And in that inflection point of economics, there's usually a number. The number is a price that really represents when something gets real. That inflection price goes down over the years, and it's just a matter of choosing a time and paying what needs to be paid. In the case of feed scanners, that number is about $600 to $700. Lurking around there are items that are built pretty well, do the job, do it in a way that's not embarrassing, but also don't end up being maintenance nightmares because you have to go and get a license or training to make it work. And I actually knew exactly which scanner would work for me right now. It's called a Fujitsu 7160. It does pages pretty quickly, and the resulting output looks pretty good. Realize, please, that Unlike digital transfer, taking something that's analog and making it something else will always lose something. In fact, often it will add something, but maybe not the things you want. Digital artifacting, banding, fuzziness, all these sorts of issues that come from either the optical or magnetic head that mean that you're not going to get exactly what you're holding in your hands. A lot of people lose a lot of sleep and a lot of happiness trying to make analog become something it's not in a digital form. Everything ends up with shortcomings when it takes this path. If you're lucky, you have what's called non-destructive scanning, which is where the original item is not destroyed in making the digital item. Your original turns into something digital, can be stored away, and then done again over time. As somebody who has had to crawl through an enormous amount of 150 dot per inch, slightly better than fax machine quality scans, there's something to be said for having another opportunity to turn it into digital again down the road. In the case of an ADF scanner, think of that carriage with the fluorescent light bulb that I told you about before. Now imagine that the two fluorescent lights on either side are mounted inside the machine and can't move. What happens instead is a set of rollers grab the bottommost sheet of paper and slowly move it through the scanner over these two static fluorescent light bulbs. Because of that situation, you are taking a bit of a risk in two different ways. First of all, the little piece of glass over the scanning element can get dirty really quickly. Every feed scanner tells you to clean up almost every time you do a new batch of papers. And of course, lurking with every single sheet is the dreaded paper jam. If you've ever dealt with a photocopier, all of this is obvious. You have a whole bunch of rollers doing a whole bunch of work, taking a whole bunch of efforts to keep things straight, but when things go wrong, it's opening up the side, looking at the damage, moving things around, and in many cases, ending up with ink and sadness all over your hands. It's just a little smaller with an ADF scanner. This is where that price point comes in. At $100 or $200, the rollers are not going to be great, and the chances for jams are pretty high. If you go up high enough, the mechanisms are from Mars, and there's probably very little chance of a jam. But at that inflection point, you can have a scanner with pretty good mechanisms that might only need replacement every few 100,000 copies. In other words, a good number of years. So between all of that, I knew what I wanted, and I thought I would do what I've really gotten good at doing in the last few years, reaching out for help. I put my case out on Twitter, if we hit the right number, go ahead and buy this thing. I also sweetened the deal by saying that I would include a credit to you on every item that I uploaded from this scanner. In my mind, I figured it would probably take a week or two to raise those kind of funds, with people being reminded of it and me letting them know how close we were, and then looking forward to ordering it. But I underestimated the things that people like to help with, so the scanner was paid for in 35 minutes. 10 minutes later, I placed the order, and it was coming in 5 days. Switching over to debt, this represents the difference in how I approach money these days. I probably could have afforded to buy that scanner outright. I would have been able to do it, still make rent, still be able to pay for groceries, all the rest of it. But it would have put a hole in my budget, a hole that I wouldn't initially feel, but would hit me hard anywhere from a few weeks to a few months down the road. Having this scanner wasn't a case of need to have. It was a case of want to have. I could get by for quite some time to come without having this thing in my life. I mean, it's not that hard to store paper and keep it in stacks, and it's not that hard to scan things one by one if it's really important, and I'm worried it's going to either disintegrate or go out of my life, but in this case, it was a luxury item. I also probably could have gone to my work and asked them for the money for it. But the fact is, they're a massive scanning operation. Thousands of books a day, not to mention LPs, 78s, and a whole other range of media. What I would have been told, and I've been told this before, is I just need to get in line. There's a whole range of materials at the archive that I've slated for us to digitize and otherwise ingest. They've just got to wait. So part of what I was paying for here was time, making things come online long before they would have naturally. But it's really important to note they would have eventually come online anyway. 5 days later, the box showed up, and I had my Fujitsu scanner on my desk, ready to go. Now, here's where things get a little non-intuitive. I've done a number of runs with this scanner. Here's what I've learned. First of all, there's always an interesting problem involving raw versus processed scans. And by that I mean the system produces an image, but the image has weird flaws and the software accounts for it. Things like a blue shift in the light or the cropping on either side. There are things that software does to handle what's coming out of the raw element. For a little while, I was really confused by this, but with a few tweaks to my software settings, things started to look really nice. Another non-intuitive thing is I still needed to use the flatbed scanner in conjunction with it. The reason for that is because some of the things that I was scanning are really ratted up. They represent manuals and books that were used by schools and individuals, and these things had a real rough life. Either the cover or the pages are a little bit curved, or they've been roughed up, or they're not even square anymore from the amount of use they got. So I had to take some of the pages and scan them on the flatbed while the feed scanner did its magic. And it was magic. In one of my first runs, I was able to take a book on how to program in Apple Logo and digitize all 339 pages in about 25 minutes. It was just beautiful watching it move through the stacks, giving it even more to process, and watching each page just appear on my screen, fully formed and ready for the next one. All told, within a couple days, I had scanned 3 full multi-hundred page books in a way that looked beautiful and were uploaded to the archive in no time at all. Now they're on the archive, fully digitized, OCR'd so you can search through them, and a part of people's lives. Victory for all. Having something this powerful means that I'm not going to use it every day. Probably not every week. You see, if you're going to set up a batch job of any sort, you have to do a whole bunch of prep and you need a whole bunch of material to justify that amount of prep. What's going to happen now is I'm going to go through my storage unit and, as best as I can, I'm going to start building up crates of paper that I think can go through the ADF scanner with the least amount of trouble. Each time I fill a crate, I'll bring that crate home and the ADF scanner will once again do its magic. This is the exact same problem that I have with Munchie, the CD reader. It doesn't make any sense to use it unless I'm doing dozens of CD-ROMs at a time. So over time, I have to wait for either someone to mail me some or to find another batch that I forgot about, and then I load it up and do the job. Until then, it lays dormant, waiting for the opportunity to strike again. I am so grateful to the folks who instantly reached out to give me this powerful tool, to be able to turn so many things digital, and for me once again to join the legions of folks out there who are really just focused on bringing online as much of life. It's a pleasure, a wonder, an honor, and for all the folks who turn analog into digital, and even digital back into digital, let me say, may your element always be clean, may your paper never jam, and may none of your magnetic media have a dropout. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to Forrest Fuqua, James Bakoyanu, Mark Pilgrim, Scott Roseanne, Scott McGrady, Joshua Stein, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. One other part of this, which I did not go into, is that there is an entire range of scanning using an ADF scanner that requires you to debind whatever you're scanning. That means remove the spine from a book or cut off the edge of a magazine. There is a huge raging debate about the pros and cons of this. I've had various positions over the years, and since I don't hold positions passively, I've yelled at a lot of folks from a lot of different sides, and those folks have later found me totally endorsing the approach I was fighting them against years before. It's the emotion of the thing. It's having to take something that's really precious and obviously rare and in some way destroy it to encourage it to be passed around to even more people. This was the fundamental thinking behind the Internet Archive's book scanner, that it was a way to scan and image books without having to destroy them. With the case of a feed scanner, you have to take the spine off of a magazine. You have to remove the spine off of a book. Now, I'm not going to be taking any spines off any books, but when it comes to magazines, there will probably be a point in the future when I consider doing so. My rule before was that I had to prove, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that a magazine existed in at least three other good copies around the world, preferably in museums. At the Strong Museum of Play, I have donated over 4,000 magazines that I know are living in their stacks, and there's really no good way for me to take those back, debind them, and scan them. So that's not going to happen. Instead, I just continue the search for other versions of them that perhaps we can debind, knowing that other copies are entirely safe, and make these available online. One thing that I do insist on in my contemporary range of thought is to debind a magazine, but also store the original. In other words, scan it, but then also put it inside of an envelope and keep that envelope labeled in storage, in case we have to scan it again or a better version of scanning comes along that can work with this paper in an even better way. Magazines are particularly involved because they are printed cheap compared to a lot of other things. The paper is very thin, it often bleeds to the other side, it usually requires some amount of surgery on the image just simply because it won't be legible. So there's a whole range of controversy there, a whole range of thinking. It's constantly moving, and it represents what a rich, involved, and emotional thing something as simple as scanning can be.